Welcome to Energy in Action. I'm your host, Marcy Young, and as a Mito patient myself, I appreciate you and the community you've helped us to build. This podcast honors the triumphs and struggles of patients and families affected by this disease and celebrates the work being done by doctors and researchers every day to make it a safer world for our people. We are a support group and a podcast focusing on all things related to mitochondrial disease.
Welcome to another episode of Energy in Action. Today, I am joined by Claire. She has been such a wonderful resource for me, and I look forward to her helping some of you. We're going to talk about nutrition today. We're going to talk about healthy eating to create energy. We're going to talk about foods that are more helpful for mitochondrial care, but this is not a prescription. This is not a physician. And we recognize there are mitochondrial conditions that have specific diet needs. And we're really today just talking to those who have low energy, low muscle tone, fatigue, and how to improve that. How can I feel less fatigued and stronger? So I welcome Claire to our episode today.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me.
Claire is a personal nutrition coach, correct?
Yes.
And I have personally worked with her and have changed my diet from her suggestions. And I hope that she can kind of share. Claire, let's start by having you go through your history and kind of how you got involved with Mito Action and how you think you can best help our audience.
Sure, of course. So my history is kind of long since I'm getting older these days, but it all started back when I was born in 1990, 2.5 months premature. I was in and out of Children's Hospital ER 56 times before I was one. I was in two comas, heart failure, kidney failure, all the shebang, until doctors started saying, you know, we think there's these things called metabolic disorders. And I was diagnosed with LCHAD by muscle biopsy at 18 months. And from there, you know, along with my parents and my family and extended friends, it's just been a learning process with geneticists and doctors. So when I went into university back in 2009 and graduated in 2014 in nutrition and dietetics, my goal actually was not to work in metabolics because I was like, you know, this is about me. I don't want to study me. But over the years, I've just realized how important it is to continue to work in this field and in this practice, and it is such a young area of research comparatively compared to other areas of research in throughout our healthcare system and so forth. So I've really kind of globbed on, and along with Stephanie Harry, I've been in touch with Mito Action, not super involved, but been aware over the years, and along with Dr. Melanie Gillingham at OHSU. So that is kind of my brief, conjumbled background.
Well, thank you for sharing.
Cheers.
So we can start with me as an example. Our listening base knows that I have CPEO. Some of the symptoms I'm trying to work on are chronic pain, fatigue, and low muscle strength. How can what I choose to put into my body have a positive effect on these issues that I deal with every day?
Yeah, so I've done quite a bit of kind of background research. I know a lot of people with mitochondrial deficiencies suffer from fatigue, muscle tone. So one of the main things I would say is just, you know, kind of be aware, you know, try moderate, low impact exercise. It sounds counterintuitive. You know, the tireder we are, the less we want to move, but typically some sort of movement, getting that heart rate up, getting the blood pumping will help. And then it also just helps overall strengthen our muscles because those little muscle tissue fibers break down a little bit and then they re-knit back together even stronger. So that's one thing. Another thing is to look at our diets overall in general, like how much of it are we getting from really simple carbohydrates, and they now have a new catch term out there these days, ultra-processed foods. So that's things like Doritos, Pops, sodas, candy, and kind of really look at saying, okay, this gives me that really quick glucose boost, which is super important to feel energized, but then that crash is even worse. So those are some general things to just start thinking about and being aware. And muscle pain, that is really tricky. I've experienced muscle pain on and off throughout my life with LCHAD, typically when I am sick with, you know, some sort of virus or some other secondary illness. But for that, the most we can do is rest, maybe look at our protein intake if we can increase that. But there's a number of factors that impact our overall feeling of exhaustion and fatigue. And I'd be happy to go into some of those if you'd like.
Okay, yeah, let's talk about that.
Sure. So I kind of view it as five categories. You know, there's our external environments. So whether that's a job, school, projects, the political climate, you know, might be stressful for some folks, or climate change. Stress has a big impact. And even if we're not cognitively aware of that stress all the time, like, oh my God, I have a big exam on Friday. I'm not sure if I'm going to memorize everything in time. That sort of stress can impact energy because we're spending a subconscious amount of time worrying about something. Then there's our internal environments that I like to call, which is our home life. So those stressors could be financial, it could be relationship oriented with a sibling, a spouse, a relative. Then there is biological stressors. So that can just be what we put on ourselves. Like if we go exercise and we overdo it, it could be us fighting off a disease of some sort of infection, whether that's viral, bacterial. There could be issues with just even non-related bodily functions like puberty or menstrual cycles that put extra stress on the body that take up a tremendous amount of our energy. And then there's weather, which I keep in a total separate category from external environments, just because for LCHAD particularly, and I'm sure for you and other mitochondrial patients out there, weather can have a big impact on energy. You know, extreme heat can cause accelerated dehydration. And then extreme cold can cause shivering, which is a natural response to try to warm up the body and those core organs to keep them safe. But that uses up a ton of energy. Climate elevation can also impact us. You know, I live down at sea level, so I'm not used to the same elevation as someone who might live in Colorado. So where you live and if you go up in elevation can impact because the oxygen's thinner and just requires more muscle energy to do the things that are normal. And then finally are kind of the big ones that we're here to talk about today. So diet's one. There's not a huge amount of evidence-based research in nutrition supportive interventions, but there are a couple I'm happy to talk about. And then the other that's totally out of your control, my control, but would be worth talking to either your PCP or even a metabolic specialist, a geneticist, if you have one, is mitochondrial deficiencies. And that topic is coming up more and more in the conversations I'm having with my doctors as kind of maybe like looking at everything in the big picture and going, you know, we're still seeing that low energy, low fatigue, and why is that when you're doing X, Y, and Z? So those are kind of the main areas. I know that was a lot, but that's what I try to consider when I think about approaching someone's general needs for more energy or why this might be happening.
So when you talk about mitochondrial deficiency, at first glance, I would think we all have that.
So we do in a sense, like, for example, LCHAD, MCAD, SCADs, even PKU patients, you're missing a particular enzyme in your DNA. You know, your genetic code just didn't copy that one right that says you can't metabolize this particular nutrient. So for LCHATs, long chain fats, SCAT, it's short chain. So we all do have an issue with processing that energy or obtaining it from a particular nutrient. But the more broader definition that we're hearing about now with mitochondrial dysfunction is actually the utilization of ATP, which is basically like the fuel of your body. It's generated through cell respiration. There's multiple enzyme bistrates used, like FDH2, NADH, pyruvate, etc. I'm not going to go into those details, but essentially all those are used in the electric transport cycle in our mitochondria to produce ATP, which is our body's fuel, like gasoline is for cars. So mitochondrial deficiency, they're looking at saying, you know what, even though you have this ATP, it may not be able to be utilized or recycled or even taken back up again in the same way of someone without a mitochondrial deficiency. So it's not that you can't create any energy, it's that energy is being put in, but it's not being able to be utilized in the same way.
Okay, I understand. So before we get into a lot of like food ideas and get specific on a daily plan to eat healthier, I want to talk about a big issue that I have is I don't have the energy to meal prep.
Of course.
So not only am I trying to find the best foods to boost my energy and I need to eat healthy, I don't want to become overweight, but on top of all of that, it takes prep time to eat healthy, and I don't have the energy for that.
Yeah, no, and that's a big double-edged sword in our society as a whole, right? I mean, we look at the prepared food sections, and that's either going to be highly processed, or it's going to be things that contain a lot of other stuff in it that we don't necessarily need. Like, not fat is important in everyone's diet, but we don't always need 20 grams of fat per half cup of tabbouleh salad, you know? Just preparations of pre-made foods tend to contain higher levels of fat because it's easier to clean the pans afterwards, right? Or they contain additives and bulking agents and emulsifiers to either make it taste better or extend its shelf life or preserve it or just simply cut down on cost of preparation so people think they're getting more for their buck. But that is really, really tricky. And even I struggle with that. So I do think there are a few things we can do, like not saying that having the same meals all the time is great, but sometimes having a meal that you don't have to look at a recipe, that you don't have to really think about the preparation, can make things quicker. Sometimes on those days when you're really tired, simple meals are going to be your best route. Like whether that's a spinach salad with some grilled chicken thrown on top. And even if you get that grilled chicken prepared, you know, you can peel it, the skin off, rinse it, get the excess sodium out, chop it up, put it on top with some dressing and some fresh veg. And that's like a 3-5 minute preparation. You have a healthy meal.
I love that idea about rinsing the chicken.
Yes.
I've never thought about that.
Totally. And you can do that with canned beans too. If you don't buy the low sodium beans, you can just simply put them in a colander, rinse them for a minute or two under cold tap water. It gets rid of as much as 70%.
Wow. I've always actually rinsed my beans, but I thought they just weren't clean enough to eat. I didn't even think about the nutritional impact.
Of course. Yeah. And that's a great, I mean, rinsing them for cleanliness is great too, you know? So I think there are some things, like a lot of times if I know I'm going to be really tired that week, I will pre-chop my onions and put them in big Ziploc gallon bag, or even use a chopping mixer and stick them in the freezer. That way you don't have to exert the energy of peeling and then slicing and cutting and then cleaning up the board and cleaning up the knife and putting the peel in the compost or in the garbage. You know, it just, what can ever save you time is going to help you in the end. And there are some great things in the freezer section. Like, you know, there's pre-cooked rices that are in the freezer section. There's cauliflower rices you can buy that are going to be lower in carbohydrates, which depending on the individual, sometimes lower carbohydrate diet during the day will help you feel more energized longer because you're not having those intense spikes of high glucose levels and then drops. You know, and then there's things like frozen berries for smoothies, which I know you do, which is fantastic. You know, simple things like yogurt and throw some granola for breakfast. Hard-boiled eggs, just make one day. You know, it doesn't take much effort. Just stick them in the fridge so you can grab and go.
Let's talk about breakfast. You've talked a little bit about how important protein is. Is protein important more so at one point in the day than another?
You know, that is a great question. I don't know that piece as well. But I think protein's important for the whole day overall.
Okay. So focus on protein all day.
Yes. And the thing about protein is you hear people talk all the time about more and more protein, more protein. You know, those are people that want to be bodybuilders. None of us here are trying to be bodybuilders. Really, between 0.8 grams per kilo, which kilos is a measure of body weight, and that's simply you take your weight in pounds and divide it by 2.2, and you're going to get your weight in kilos. So between 0.8 and 1.0, 1.2 is as much increase in protein I'd recommend. So for like you, when I've worked with patients in the past where I've raised their protein level slightly, for an adult woman that might look like between 60 and 65 grams a day, which really isn't that hard to hit. Now, if you're someone that doesn't like to eat a lot of meat during the day, or you're not a big fan of like dairy products, like low-fat milk, cheese, cottage cheese, yogurts, you can easily supplement that with either a protein powder or protein shakes. You know, different brands are going to deliver different amounts, but my favorite protein shake, no thinking, is a Premier protein shake. They only have 1 gram of sugar and 30 grams of protein in.
So that's like half of your daily need.
And that right there is a no think. You just grab it from the fridge and you go. You don't have to prepare. You don't have to use a blender. You don't have to clean up. Just one and done.
So a gram of protein in one of those drinks is equal to a gram of protein in meat?
I mean, it should be. You know, that's more of like biochemist question. But relatively speaking, that should be the equivalent. Yeah.
So I can lean on meat the way I can lean on a protein shake?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
You just want to make sure you're picking more of the lean meats, you know, so make sure your ground beef is I would go between 85% to 90% lean. That way you just know you're not getting all that excess saturated fat that typically can be in red meat. You know, lean ground turkey is great. You know, sliced turkey meat is a great option. Sliced ham steaks, lamb is a very lean meat option. If you like lamb, it's kind of more of a gamey flavor, But I mean, I like it. So, but not everyone likes it. So you have to experiment and see what sticks out to you. For example, elk meat, I think it's crazy. Like elk meat is almost double the protein per serving of ground beef. It's not a super common product we see in the market, but some specialty foods and maybe even like Amazon grocery delivery, maybe a specialty food market would have it, or you can look online if you want to try it and order it from a supplier, but they might have larger portions than you want when you try something new. But elk meat's a great option. I use that as the base of my bolognese, just because I know it's leaner, has higher rates of protein, and it's really yummy, and it makes a bolognese feel fancier than it actually is.
That sounds really good. So let's get back to the, like, to paint the picture of the day. So let's talk breakfast. What are some of our best options? We talked eggs. Eggs anyway?
Yeah, you know, yes. Again, I would watch frying them. I wouldn't necessarily fry them because frying, again, adds that excess oil that you may not necessarily need, but you're welcome to. So eggs are good. I like to do, when I cook eggs for breakfast, one full egg, including the yolk, and one just egg white. That way I get less cholesterol from the egg yolk overall in my breakfast. I like to, you know, oatmeals. There's tons of great instant oatmeals, like, you know, Bob's Red Mill that has an instant oatmeal, but they contain chia seeds and flax seeds, which are all great sources of unsaturated fatty acids that help with, you know, fullness and energy and cell wall health. Other great options. Oh, I'm not a huge breakfast person, so this is good. It's a challenge. You can incorporate, you know, breakfast cereals that are fortified in those vitamins and just pair it with, you know, some low-fat milk and throw some fruit on top, like blueberries or strawberries, bananas. And that's going to be a really good, easy, quick, low physical exertion meal. Things like French toast, things like quiches, they're all really delicious. They take slightly more energy and work to make, but they should be our sometimes breakfasts. You might notice if you have, you know, French toast in the morning on a Saturday, it's really yummy. You feel great. That really yummy maple syrup or brown sugar, whatever you like to put on it. And then in a couple hours, you might, you know, crash in the sense where you're just like, oh my God, I want to take a nap. And that again is the glucose spikes and falls. So I don't say there's any one thing you should eliminate, but I would really focus on increasing your protein at breakfast. It's going to make you fuller longer. Increasing your antioxidants, so like blueberries, grapes, different chia seeds, you know, they give you energy longer because they keep you fuller longer. So they're going to release that energy from digestion much slower than, say, bread, which metabolizes very quick in our system. We want to try to modulate that energy output if we're trying to battle fatigue and lack of energy.
It seems like a lot of breakfast foods would be easy to add, like chia seed or flax seed.
Totally.
Can we talk about the magic behind the food avocado?
Avocado's pretty amazing. I love a good avocado. I was doing research a few days ago more about, like, when we'll talk about this later, like certain deficiencies that can lead to extreme fatigue, exhaustion, low energy. But avocados contain some B vitamins in them, which I did not realize before I looked into it. They contain the highest level of carnitine that's naturally found in the environment. So some of your mitochondrial patients and listeners on this podcast might be prescribed carnitine. I think carnitine's great. It the L-carnitine, which is just a fancy way of describing how the molecule looks in a picture of biochemistry. It helps break down certain fats in our bodies. And everybody, not just mitochondrial patients, everybody needs carnitine. And our bodies, mine particularly in El Chad, I'm not sure about other mitochondrial diseases, but mine does not create carnitine. So my brother, who is non-affective, non-carrier of El Chad, so he does not have a mitochondrial disease at all or deficiency, his body will make a certain amount of carnitine to help in that process of breaking down those fatty acids, where mine doesn't. But that doesn't mean that we all can't probably benefit from it in avocados are great. I mean, you can use them in cooking oil. You know, avocado oil has become a big thing because it's considered an unsaturated fat. So good rule of thumb, unsaturated fats are going to be better for us than saturated fats when it comes to artery health, plaque buildup in our arteries, etc. Unsaturated fats are going to generally be liquid at room temperature, where saturated fats are going to be solid. So if you think about butter, that's pretty solid at room temperature, right? So that's going to be a saturated fat. Lard is a saturated fat. Olive oil, avocado oil, those are going to be unsaturated fats. And avocados are a good source of fat as well. They're just a very cool fruit.
I started using avocado oil cooking spray.
Yeah. Do you like it?
Yeah. I don't see why not.
Exactly. And it's better for you than canola. So way to go.
Right? So we haven't used the word calorie yet.
Yes. Yes.
Makes me kind of happy.
Oh, I'm so glad. You know.
Tell us why we haven't talked about calories.
So that's funny you say that. I actually, on my blog, tomorrow I'll be launching a new blog post talking about calories. I generally don't talk about calories when I'm talking about general energy, because I feel like that is so specialized to the individual person. You know, our calorie requirement is going to depend on so many factors: our current height, our weight, our current energy output, you know, through exercise, how sedentary we are in our daily life. Are you working at a desk? Are you in school at a desk most of the day? Or are you outside most of the day? Calories, we get different amounts of energy from different types of calories. So like our fats are going to provide the highest amount of calorie per gram. So that's 9 kilocalories of energy per 1 gram of fat. Carbohydrates, protein, 4 grams, kilos of energy per 1 gram. And then our carbs provide about four kilos of energy per 1 gram. So I just, unless I'm working with a person individually, I tend to not want to get too detailed in calorie intake and output. To that note, I will say, if you're eating an incredible amount of excess calories, you know, just like you're sitting on the couch and you're just eating snacks all day, or you're sitting at your desk at work and you're just, you know, that hand is just constantly in the bowl. I don't care if it's carrots or it's, you know, rice crackers. There might get to be a point where your excess calorie intake is going to start to affect your overall energy level, just because your body is being so bombarded by having to do so much work to break down, transport, and store those excess calories. So that would be my one caveat.
Okay, thank you. The biggest takeaways I got when we worked together are high protein, low sugar.
Yeah, my philosophy, a Harvard Health study looked at artificial sweeteners, and they can be anywhere from 200 to 600 times sweeter than our natural cane sugar, like our white table sugar. So that also plays a big role in our just our body being tricked into, oh my God, we need more and more of this because we're not getting that same sweet sensation that maybe an orange would if we eat less sugar in our diet.
And for someone that likes a sweet, you're getting used to something that's so much sweeter.
Totally.
There were four foods that you told me are filled with sugar that you don't initially think about. Let's share that with our audience. Tomato sauce, yogurt, bread,
and crackers.
Yes.
Was that the fourth?
Oh my gosh. Yep. Those are all secret sources. In the big food industry, a really big deal is we just talked about, like, we all crave sweet. I mean, I crave it, you crave it, your husband craves it, your kids, our listeners, friends and families, everyone is going to crave sweets at some point. And what big food companies like to do is add sugar to products, especially like low-fat products. A lot of times you have to be really careful and look because they will want to take out the fat, that mouthfeel that we get from fat, and replace it with sugar because it fills it, right? It bulks it up. Mm-hmm. It adds back a complexity mouthfeel that you get when you eliminate another macronutrient like fat. So they add them to get us to not only make it cheaper for them to produce, but also for us to want to buy more because we are becoming addicted. Sugar works on the same neural pathways in our brain as heroin and cocaine does. So sugar is a pretty, pretty impressive natural food source that has pretty big implications on us. Now, this does not mean that I am like an anti-sugar person. You know, I get the occasional caramel lattes. I put honey in my tea. I love to bake cakes and share it. If it's just me, I'm probably not going to bake a whole cake because no one needs that much cake in their life. If you feel from listening to this that you are a person that wants to really start modifying, or like an LCHAD patient, when I was a little kid and I'd go to the pool and swim with my friends all day, there would be points where my health was not as stable as it is today. And that's just the facts with mitochondrial diseases, we kind of go through these waves of where we're stable and then we're not stable and we're stable and we're not stable. And that could be anywhere from growth spurts or poor diet or poor health management or just not figuring out the right balance yet, working with our doctors, figure out, you know, what is helpful, what is not helpful in supplements, in prescriptions, in energy. And from that, when I was little, you know, I'd like to go swim, but if I wasn't careful, I could crash and I could have what my family called tired legs, where it's hard to walk, the muscle is breaking down and being processed through the kidneys in creating myoglobins, which are not good. That's a clear sign your muscles are under attack by your body. And so one way they try to help combat that was my mom, after an hour or so, she'd be like, okay, get out and drink a Mountain Dew. And to this day, I hate Mountain Dew because I was forced to drink it. And I just remember all my friends when we were little would be like, oh my God, I want Mountain Dew. And their mom be like, no, here's water, you know? And they're like, why does Claire get Mountain Dew? I'd try to be like, I'll trade you. And my mom be like, drink your Mountain Dew. Just because it gave that extra sugar, that quick digestible energy that I needed because I was outputting so much energy. But now as an adult, I don't necessarily need that because I'm not swimming in the pool 2-3 hours a day in the summer.
I was just going to say, I can't imagine a scenario that an adult, a mito adult especially, would need that fix, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you've been so helpful. Any last minute nuggets of wisdom that you want to share?
Totally. So there's a couple things. One, if you're really suffering from like chronic fatigue, and in some studies through the National Health Services, has been reviewing a number of studies in this most recent article about chronic fatigue syndrome. And one of the things they look at is deficiencies in vitamins, particularly our B vitamins. So B vitamins 1, 2, 3, and vitamin 6 all play a role in helping your body extract that energy from food. And vitamin B6 helps not only us use that energy that was then extracted from food to be stored and used from our carbohydrates and protein. So if you think you have any deficiencies in those because you're like, I am so tired, it might be worth to ask your PCP or your metabolic physician or your geneticist to say, hey, can you do a quick blood work and check my vitamin B levels? 1, 2, 3, and 6. And that's a super easy blood test. They have no problems running it. If you need supplements, they're really easy to buy. You honestly don't need a ton of supplements. The UK system recommends 1.1 milligrams of like B1, for example, for a male, and 0.8 milligrams for a female. So that's really easy. And there's tons of foods that have B vitamins in them. Quick Google search will bring up whole myriads of lists. The other final note I want to say is the Journal of Nutrition and Dietetics in 2017, they did a literature review study of all these different diets, looking at what can help with chronic fatigue and low energy, especially in patients that report it. So these are all symptomatic reports, like be like you and me going into our doctors saying, oh my God, some days I don't even have the energy to boil water, let alone make pasta, or walk down a city block to go pick up a takeout order. So this study looked at things and they found significant findings across 17 different research studies looking at nutrition, that an addition of an NADH, which is a molecule we talked about earlier that helps create ATP, that energy for our body, an additional supplement of that can be really useful in some patients to help boost their energy. Also adding a CoQ10 supplement. So a lot of eye physicians these days are recommending that for eye health, but they're also starting to see CoQ10 as a great supplement to help you utilize that ATP more efficiently in our bodies. And so those are the two things I would, if nothing else in our conversation seemed useful today, those would be the two main things I would have you consider and talk to your doctor about.
Thank you for such a useful conversation.
Of course, anytime. And I do have a website too that has a blog. The website is www.i-g-c.com. So it's ingoodcompany.com. You can also search for it by looking up In Good Company with Claire Held. And there I have blog posts that use research to back up the postings, and also information how to get in contact if you're interested.
Awesome. Yes. I highly recommend a one-on-one coaching session.
Well, thank you so much, Marcy. This was really fun today.
Good. I'm so glad you enjoyed it. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, take care.
Thank you for joining us. I encourage you to browse other Energy in Action podcast episodes. I'm so inspired by the resilience of those in previous episodes, and I know you will be too.